You're listening to the Nature Connection show on Natural Health Radio. My name is Sarah Turner. My guest today is Joe Barker. Joe is a kinesiologist, a permaculture designer, and teacher. Welcome to the Nature Connection show, Joe.
Thank you, Sarah.
It's exciting to have you here sharing all your wisdom with the listeners of Nature Connections. So tell us a little bit about yourself, how you came to do what you do today, and how you work with the earth, because it's a strand that sort of weaves all the way through what you do.
Wow, it's a big question. Okay, I'll give it a go. I think you're right. Working with the land is really the thread that connects it all together. And it's really about having a deeper connection to ourselves and to the earth and being part of all creation. And the way that expresses itself is quite creatively through something called permaculture, which stands for permanent human culture or permanent agriculture. And that's a sustainable design system. But I'll talk more about that later, I think. Yeah. And kinesiology, which is working with our own energy. And it's a sort of therapy which is based on Chinese traditional medicine and uses muscles to help us communicate with our mind-body system. The two things don't seem to be related at first glance, but for me, they're both completely connected and they both give us amazing, empowering tools into becoming more balanced in a more natural way without intervening too much.
And I know you work a lot with balance, don't you? Because having experienced kinesiology myself, I know it's very much connected to that. And that also is totally part of the permaculture, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. I think, in a way, this is at the core of these two things, that we're always in a balance. But I think when our bodies have illness, then our bodies are out. We say they're out of balance, but they're not really. I think the illness is sort of bringing it into a different kind of balance. But the problem with illness is that, there's a lot of problems with illness, but really our body's trying to bring itself back into balance, or this is how I see it. And, well, we could look at any problem and see this. And to bring things back into a natural, healthy balance is the aim for permaculture, whether it's applied to ourselves as this kinesiology or applied to anything. So for example, when we use chemicals, that's a way of intervening and that can be used to bring things back into balance, and conventional medicine does do that. But there's certain, when we use quite a strong intervention like that, it doesn't always help with the balance. It can change the symptoms. But when we're moving towards a natural balance, we want to do as little intervention as possible, and chemicals would be the last thing we'd want to go for, really. So with permaculture, we can see this very clearly. We'd want to make the least change for the greatest effect. That's the permaculture principle, and that's really a very useful principle applied to natural health.
I love that principle. That's very profound, isn't it?
Oh, permaculture's full of principles, and that's one of the parts of it as a design system. We have principles as thinking tools, and there's loads of them that are observed in nature, because really it's about learning from our forests and natural systems and applying those lessons into situations where we have problems to solve.
Well, being a Tai Chi practitioner, I also see that within the Chinese system as well, which is all about taking the easiest path, you know, taking if we want to go from A to B, which is the route that takes the least energy. So yes, it's all going back to the core principles, isn't it, of the earth. So which part of you came first, the kinesiologist or the permaculturalist, or did they both come together?
Oh, that's a really interesting question, because I think both have been around. I think I'm a very sensitive person, as probably a lot of people listening are, and I learnt to dowse when I was in my early 20s, which is a form of kinesiology. And somebody showed me muscle checking at that age. And I think that came to me probably around the same time, actually. But I think permaculture was something that has always been around in my life. And where my father grew up in Italy, in the mountains, I saw a whole self-sufficient life. I mean, it wasn't easy, but I saw people, a whole community, it doesn't exist anymore, by the way, live completely off the land. And I know a lot of people still do this around the world, but I actually got to live it when I was a child for, you know, in the summer holidays. But I saw, you know, there was no electricity. They did have running water from streams, but there's no sort of toilets and all that sort of thing, but you know, proper toilet with water. But they had compost toilets, which my uncle was still using until he passed away 2 years ago. And everyone had chickens and rabbits and a cow for milk or goat. And they grew crops on the land that was sort of lower down. And they used forests for the firewood. So they were completely self-sufficient in those basic needs. And there was a really strong, thriving community. But I think, unfortunately, you know, people move to the cities as they're doing all over the world. I mean, more people live in cities now than in the countryside. It's the official fact.
Wow.
And it seems to be moving more that way. So this village is almost completely empty now. There's only a few really, really old people there and a few people who've kept houses for holiday homes. But it's quite sad.
It is sad. Then,
I think that really had a big effect on me anyway, sort of seeing that we don't need everything we need. We can have where we are, and it's such a more gentle, simpler approach. And I think this is the exciting thing with both kinesiology and permaculture. They're quite based in ancient wisdom, but actually we can apply them to our future way of thinking and get the benefits from what our ancestors do, but we can approach it in a slightly different way. Like, we've got access to so many exciting different crops we can grow as food that our ancestors didn't have access to. And also, there's so much wisdom we still have to access from our ancestors. For example, acorns is something that I've recently really realised is really easy for us to eat. And I do a lot of foraging, and I take people out foraging. And I know you wanted to talk about foraging.
I'd love to, yes.
It's the thing I strangely get asked to do the most. And I've been foraging for about 20 years, firstly because I didn't have much money, and it seemed the information was around. I was around people foraging because I was interested in permaculture, and I have been for over 20 years. And also, I really didn't want to eat chemically grown food, so I was really into organic food, and it was quite hard to get hold of, you know, 20-odd years ago. So foraging was a really good way of doing things cheaply and organically. So that's how I started. But I've learned more since I've started teaching foraging, because you probably know, you know, when we teach, we learn.
Mm.
So I love going on foraging walks. I seem to be doing one a week at the moment.
Really?
And it's a great, I think, you know, even though it's December now, and lots of people probably don't think realise there's a lot of food around. There's food everywhere, every day of the year. And, you know, it's quite an exciting realisation to have.
Obviously, it's difficult to talk about tips for foraging if you're not physically there and there are any visual clues. But just from interest, we are, as you say, in early December here as we're recording. What food is around us here in England at the moment, in the south of England?
Okay, well, it depends which habitat we're in. And I like foraging in gardens, and as well as the beach and the woods. We're very lucky where I live. We've got all sorts of different places to go. But what's really good is right now at this time of year, because each season has its own particular special thing going on, we've still got the end of the autumn fruits, and there's lots of rose hips around. And because we've only had a couple of frosts, in fact, some people in Kent haven't had any, we're still waiting for the rose hips to get that hit of frost to go a bit soft. So that's one thing to look for. And obviously these foods, well, we've co-evolved with these foods, and by some strange coincidence, which I've only just really fully appreciated, these foods really support us at these different times of year. So, of course, roasted suet's packed full of vitamin C and gives our immune system a real boost. So very easy to make a really good herbal tonic for the rest of the winter. But also, you know, if you get a big one, you can just nibble the flesh away, and it's a really sweet treat. You have to be careful not to eat the seeds though, because they're like itching powder. But there's lots of greens around, and there's always greens around, and it's good to get really fresh young things, like chickweed starts coming into its own at this time of year. There's still youngish nettles around, and I only ever eat the top four leaves, but if we find young leaves, they seem to be around most of the year, except for a gap in the middle of the summer. And then, of course, winter's a time for roots. So there's lots of roots we can eat, like dandelion, alexanders. There's all sorts of things. But obviously, there are some rules with foraging, and unless it's your piece of land, we need to get permission before we dig up things, because roots are protected. But it's good to know that this is the time of year for roots, because
yes. This
is usually where the sugars are stored from the plant, so there's lots of carbohydrates, and that's what our body needs to keep our energy up during the cold months in England, of course. I've talked about foraging for hours. I think it's an amazing way to connect.
It just connects us straight back to the land, doesn't it, even through listening.
Oh, thanks, that's great. But you know what's so exciting, which I really, really love, the idea is that we are part of this natural system. And it sounds so obvious to say, but for me it feels like the penny's been dropping slowly for years, and it's like, I know it really, but it's so easy not to feel part of it in our modern day society. But in a way, it's the antidote to our modern day society. I think we all have this longing, and it's where we belong. Our home is being part of the system. And I haven't mentioned the main thing that I do, which probably sounds a bit bizarre when I talk about kinesiology, but I design edible forest gardens. So they're the gardens to forage in, basically. And this is inspired by a really ancient tradition of gardens around the world, and which became popular again by Robert Hart in the 60s. He built a garden for his brother to get some fresh food, and they were fruitarians. They only ate leaves and the plants that weren't in the ground, but incredibly healthy. But the research I've done shows that this is a really ancient thing we've done for millennia, and some people even think the Amazon rainforest might be a huge food forest that's been intervened with for years, for thousands and thousands of years. And there are the oldest forest garden I've heard of is in India, which is 800 years old, and it's packed full of medicinal plants and edibles, and is seen just as part of a lifestyle. And there's gardens all over the place like this, and it's a really exciting thing to be part of,
isn't it? And you won an award, didn't you? A gold award.
Yeah.
Tell everybody about that.
Well, this is an interesting one as well. Just the idea, well, I went from Kent Wildlife Trust. They run a project called Wild About Gardens, and I entered my garden and one of my clients entered theirs. And the idea that, we all like wildlife, but I hadn't fully appreciated that permaculturally designed gardens or forest gardens are wildlife gardens, where we are actually part of the wildlife. And there wasn't anything I needed to do other than add perhaps a hedgehog house or a bat home to make it more wildlife friendly. It was a really insightful moment when I realised my garden is quite wildlife friendly, and I got a gold the first time I put my garden in, which was I was really shocked, to be honest, and delighted.
Well, congratulations, yeah.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Nature Connection Show on Natural Health Radio with Sarah Turner of Essentially Flowers Training and Moonflower Essences. Your weekly connection direct to the heart of nature. So, wow, you do many things, don't you? But they all have this central core. So I think what might be useful, could you, let's go through, let's look at kinesiology and permaculture in turn, so to speak. And so if somebody was to, wanted to come and see yourself, if they were to live near you, or a kinesiologist in general, if they live in another part, why would we consult with a kinesiologist? How do they help us?
Okay, it's a great question. I think kinesiology, for me, it's just so effective and so easy, and it seems to have stunning results. What kinesiology does is we can take any issue in our system, emotional, physical, mental, spiritual, and the idea is that we turn it around. We, you know, what's it like not to have that issue? And that's what we work with. And we release stress out of the system using the muscle checking, which gives us a communication tool so we can find out where the issue is, when it started, that sort of thing. This is all just information. And in a way, it's very easy to be sceptical about kinesiology, and a lot of people are. A lot of people are quite cross about it, actually, because there's not much scientific data that backs it up that satisfies certain people. But the thing is, it seems to work. And the first thing is to release the stress, and then to set a goal, a more positive goal about how we want the situation to be. There's quite a lot of different kinesiologies. So I'm talking about creative kinesiology, which is the main one I've been trained in. I've done a few others. But I think this is the most exciting, because we let the client, well, we go on a journey with the client, we walk with them, and we help them uncover what's needed in that session. And usually it happens so quickly. And I found many times that people forget why they came to me, because it's so effective. And in a way, that's a bit, it can be, you know, people forget, and then they forget how good it is. But I have people still coming to me that I trained in 2004-05. Yeah, so I've had people coming to me for nine years still. So it's not like the main thing I do, but it's part of it. And I do work with the land with kinesiology as well, and clients. And I think that's a very good tool, because our bodies are like land. You know, they are, you know, it's our own little world.
Yes.
I don't see there's any, you know, it's, and the same herbal medicine we can use on the land as our bodies, it does similar things, you know.
And essences too, as I'm sure
you do. Yes, absolutely. Yes,
we haven't even began to talk about essences, which I know is something.
Because you work with flower essences too, don't you?
Pardon?
You work with flower essences too.
Not just flowers, but vibrational essences. It's an interesting one. I think this is where the sensitivity thing comes in. I play it down a lot, and I would like not to do that so much. Like having just talking with you, it feels really such a relief, really, to be able to, you know, talk about feeling sensitive, and it's, you know, it's a good thing. It's a really great way of being able to tune in to places and people and help things get back into the more natural balance and reach a potential towards natural health and happiness, which I think is our natural way of being. I think essences are really interesting, and they can help us do this in a really gentle way. And it's all about intention. But I have captured essences from situations like weddings and parties and ceremonies, and as well as plants. And I did a mushroom recently. So I think we can capture vibrational essences from everything. I do work a lot with flower essences, it's true.
Yeah.
And also land essences. I've worked with essences made from different landscapes. And star essences.
Wow.
It's exciting, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, these are all tools that nature is giving us to help enhance our own lives.
Yep, brilliant. It's lovely to hear you talk about that. So talk to us a little bit now about permaculture, because it's a word that we see often. If we look in certain places, certainly I'm talking from my experience, there's the Permaculture magazine, and you walk through help shops and you see the word in articles. And again, I'm talking from personal experience a little bit. I don't think even I realize quite the depth of permaculture, and there are many people who don't even really understand what it is and what it offers. So would you talk to us a little bit about it?
Yeah, of course. I think permaculture's been, I just think it's the most brilliant thing. And I have to say, it's been my passion for almost the whole of my adult life. And it's just a wonderful tool to help us work through human problems and somehow get back to some natural way of doing things. It's been described as common sense in a world that hasn't got any in, if you like. But it stands for basically permanent human culture. Originally, permanent agriculture. The phrase was termed by two guys from Australia, David Holmgren and Bill Mollison, in the 70s. And they thought that they could see that a food crisis was coming into the world, and they saw that using ecological principles to grow food could be a really good idea, and they did explore this, and their works influenced the whole movement. It's been happening very slowly from the ground up over the last, three decades. Actually, our British Permaculture Association is celebrating its 30th birthday this year, so it's been in Britain for 3 decades. So how that's relevant today is that it's mostly seen as being to do with food, but it can be applied to everything, every part of human. And it's really about redesigning the way we do things, using, founded in permaculture ethics, which are really exciting tools on their own. So we have the three ethics of caring for the earth, caring for people, and fair shares, which is about a good use of resources, which is about future care. So the idea is that they all rhyme, you know, people care, earth care, fair share. And when we apply these ethics to any situation, we can see if there needs to be an area addressed, because that's where it's not going to be sustainable. So we could apply it to anything. If there's not enough earth care going on, so if we apply it to ourselves, and, you know, if we're not feeling well, are we caring enough for our own bodies, you know, our own little earth? Are we caring for our people stuff? You know, how is it with our families and our friends? And are we using our resources well, our time and energy? We can apply it to anything. It can often highlight where the energy is needed to apply the work. And then coupled with the principles, like I mentioned, there's loads of principles to work from, hundreds. And Holmgren's has picked 12 new ones, which are, about 10 years old now, which are used as a design to design systems as a whole set. But some of my favourites are still the ecological ones, which are more attitudinal. Things like, you know, the problem is the solution. And I was reading yesterday a quote someone said about the I Ching, that, you know, the problem is where we need to put our energy, because that's showing us a way through our lives. It's like a shining light. So the problem is where our most learning comes from. It's a pain, but I like that saying as well. You know, the truth will set us free.
Yes.
But first, it'll piss us off. I think that was Susan Jeffers.
Yeah.
So another principle is work with nature, not against it, which is really a lot that we've been talking about.
Yeah.
Work with nature, it's just more gentle. When we try and stop things happening, that takes a lot of energy. Mm. But when we work with the seasons, like in foraging, when I go out foraging on Friday with another group, we're going to be looking for, you know, the late berries and what plants have roots. So, you know, what leaves are still around. So we're going to be working with seasons. We're not going to be looking for apples or, you know, carrots. Well, we might be carrots. Why did I say carrots? But I was going to say strawberries, but we will be looking for strawberries because there's a strawberry tree at the place we're going, which has is a big evergreen tree with lots of strawberries on it at this time of year.
Wow.
And with nature. So it's a lot about efficiency as well, and relative location's another principle that I really like. So, you know, we're going to work with where we are. So I always try and forage where I am. I don't take people far away from where they're going to be. So I like to help. I do want to foraging with people in their own gardens, as well as take people out on walks. And that's quite important.
Yes, yes. Well, it's so exciting what you do. It's just, it's extraordinarily connected and yet different.
I know, it's
lovely.
I do work with community groups as well, and I never mentioned my original background as a landscape architect. So so the connection with the land was there from the beginning. So that was a really nice thing to study, to work with the land. And I've also been involved with a lot of community-supported agriculture farm projects. And I studied biodynamic agriculture as well with the late Alan Brotman. I was very lucky to do that. And that's a very spiritual way of connecting to farming. So I have this strange synthesis of all these different sort of things weaving through my life, but it does always come back to people and land, and that's what permaculture is really about. And the fact I do kinesiology, it just ties it all together nicely for me. It's a healing modality that can, it's really empowering. So I do a type of kinesiology that's called life tracking, which is more life coachy rather than as a therapist, although I do that too. But it's all about, you know, a journey to just becoming more ourselves, actually. And I just find that fascinating. You know, I don't have to be something I'm not. I just need to be what I am. And
yep.
I think that's what nature shows us too. You know, when a tree is a tree, and it doesn't try to be anything else, as most animals do, apart from our domesticated ones. They're just doing what they are, and they're happy. And I think that's the one of the profound basic secrets for us as well. And I honestly think we're meant to be living in the forest again. And I would love to spend more time exploring that as an idea for our communities. And, like planting nut forests. I've been doing a lot of research in that recently. And that's something I'm trying to do more of, is encourage people to plant trees. And protect the existing food forests, including the Amazon.
So important what you're doing, really, really important. And it totally resonates with me, this concept, if that's the right word, of us just being ourselves. It's that easy.
I know, but it is actually quite hard as well.
It's really hard. It's the easiest thing, yeah, the hardest thing. Yes, exactly. So I always like to ask people on the Nature Connections show to offer a practical tip to listeners. So is there something that anybody, anywhere, could maybe take as an idea that they could put into practice in their lives today or tomorrow?
Yeah, there's one very nice thing to do, and very profound and simple thing. I think these things often are.
Yeah.
And that's just to stop at any point in the day, anywhere, and just notice. That's all, just notice. Notice the wild nature. And if you're in the middle of a high-rise building and you can't see any, just look at the sky. That's still wild nature. And there's just something about connecting with the natural system and reminding ourselves that we're part of it, that just brings us peace and stillness, and can help bring, you know, balance just very quickly. So that's my tip, is stop and notice. It's a bit like stopping to smell the flowers, but it is a practice you can do anywhere, any time of the day. Even if you're in bed with your eyes closed, you know, you don't need your eyes. You can just breathe in the air and notice, you know. So that's it. That's my tip.
Yeah, very great. Great, thank you for that. And before we say goodbye to you, can you tell everybody how they can find out more about you and your website?
Oh, yes, okay. I have a website. My business name is dynamic equilibrium, which is to do with dynamic balance, because we're always in balance, like I said earlier. But it's about, you know, it is a dynamic thing. So this weaves permaculture and kinesiology together nicely. So my website's www.dynamicequilibrium.com. Sorry, it's got a dash in between it. So it's www.dynamic-equilibrium.co.uk. And I have a Facebook page called Joe Barker Permaculture, which if you want to like that, that would be great. And yeah, you could also look up the Creative Kinesiology website, and Permaculture Association Britain has a great website too. They're the two organisations I'm affiliated with. And I haven't even mentioned the transition movement, but if you want to find out more about that, you'll have to look separately, because that's connected to, that's a community permaculture.
Well, tell us about that.
Okay, so at this time, we are in a time of great change, and it has been called the Great Turning. We have things like climate change going on, and there's something called peak oil, which is the idea the oil's running out, and it's going to be more and more expensive. And in fact, people are talking about peak water, peak money, you know, like the idea the economic system could break down. There's so many things that could change and that are so fragile. And we have something called the transition movement, which is about a gentle community response to all these things, particularly climate change, peak oil and economic downturn. So it's a way of applying permaculture to, at a community level. So that's it in a nutshell, really. And what we're doing is really, it's about helping people do things more locally and reskilling, so that people do things more for themselves, like grow food or mend things or share things. It's a really simple idea, but it's a movement that seems to be all around the world now.
Okay. Yeah. And how can people connect in with that? Is it that, did you say there was a website?
Yeah, if they Google transition, they'll find lots of resources. There's quite a lot of films and books and YouTubes, and there's a transition network website for Britain as well, and in other countries.
Okay.
There's a lot of resources available, and there's probably a local group near where any listeners are listening from.
Brilliant. That's really helpful.
It's all about empowering ourselves at every level, really.
And you are based in Kent?
That's right.
So if people are local to the southeast of England, wouldn't it be great if people could connect and do some foraging with you, maybe work with you in other ways too?
Yeah, there's a lot of really great things going on in Kent, particularly in East Kent, and I'm based in Canterbury. Yeah, so if they want to get in touch, I can connect them up to the local community projects I know of, or I'm always available on Skype as well.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Jo. That's been really inspiring talking to you today, and I'm sure lots of
other people
will feel much more connected to themselves and to the land having listened to you.
Oh, it's been delightful talking about this. I mean, it's great that somebody wants to listen.
Yeah, well, it's obvious that you're really passionate about what you do, and that's the key to everything, isn't it, is passionate, because when we're passionate, then we can empower others to be the same.
I do feel very lucky that I have this passion, which is so wonderful. It feels like a real gift. Thanks for having me on the show.
You're very, very welcome. Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.